For Auld Lang Syne.
Happy New Year, folks. Did you see Dick Clark? Did you see him?
10, 9, 8.
Did you see him? I don't, it's not like he needs to be there. He doesn't need to be there. But he was there. Good old Dick Clark. He's hanging there. I give the buddy credit. I just don't know why they keep dragging him out there. I'm pretty sure he's saying to himself,
why do they keep dragging my old bones out here, Ryan Seacrest?
And speaking of Ryan Seacrest, I finally figured it out. I can't deal with anyone in this house, but it's over. I finally figured it out, folks. I finally figured it out. The reason why the unemployment rate is so high is because Ryan Seacrest has got every damn job. That's, I swear to you, he's got every job. I was in Connecticut at Dunkin' Donuts, Old Saybrook, and Ryan Seacrest got me a tall, light and sweet hazelnut coffee. I'm telling you, without a doubt. He's got every job. It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio, of course. You can check out ReeseOnTheRadio.com if you want to check out this show and every show thereafter. If you want to check out the archives, yes, I'm plugging everything. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com, that's the blog. That's the website. I hate calling it a blog. It's a website. That's what it is. I don't blog. I don't know anything about that stuff. But anyway, that's the website, ReeseOnTheRadio.com, and Reese is back. Three long years back on the air. Finally, back on the air. And we'll be doing this show for you. And definitely for you. And we'll be enjoying it every day. Every day that we can. Joining me on the air is, of course, our producer, Mr. JC. Hello, JC.
Hey, man. What's going on, man?
It's for me, it's just wonderful to be back. And I'm pretty much promoting everything. I should promote the telephone number. Should I do that?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, the number is 347-308-8701. Again, 347-308-8701. If you want to call in, if you want to chit-chat, talk about whether or not I'm a fool, a buffoon, why the heck are you doing this? Couldn't you just wait for a terrestrial job? No, absolutely not. Sometimes
no.
You have to take life by the horns. Isn't that right, JC? You have to take life by the horns.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, if they don't give it to you, you got to call and make it yourself.
That's right. If they don't want to,
we're living in these times.
That's right. If they don't want to give it to you, you have to take it. Now, I'm not saying do anything nefarious or illegal, but you have to go out there and take it. So I figured it was only right that we just make a radio show. And the good folks over at blogtalkradio.com made it possible for us. I mean, they took every dime, but, you know, they made it possible. You know, but they made it interesting for us and for other people who want to do this. And I'm actually glad. I ran into Blog Talk Radio a couple of years ago. I heard about them, and I was kind of intrigued. But it took, I guess it took till now till I jumped on board. The most important thing is to say that Reese on the Radio is back, and the number is 347-308-8701. And see, was the audio thing different this time, JC? When I had the audio down, you can hear my voice better, right?
Ron, you can hear you a lot better now than you were a couple days ago.
Yeah, I figured as much, and I wanted to make sure that I did. We're going to have a lot of people joining us on the show. Let me do one important thing before we do anything. I just want to say that I'm happy that we're back. Please let me just thank a couple of really, really good people who really made all of this possible. The people who made everything that's happened so far in my life possible and who have been great friends, I want to say thank you to Paula and Randall. Of course, our good friend Gene Pinkham, who I know is holding on the line right now, and I'm about to get to him because I want everybody to say hello to our good friend Gene Pinkham. Carol D., Laura and Daniel, Boogie, a special thanks to Miss Buckley, Robert Paris, and of course you've already met JC, and my loving family who's made all this possible, even though my nephew has been a screaming and whining maniac in the background for days. I want everybody to know that he's got an ear infection. That's what I want everybody to know. No, what I want everybody to know is that my road to get back here, although long and although arduous, was not in vain. None of it was done in vain, because, you know, sometimes you have to go through those things to find where your focus is. And if some of you listened to the preview yesterday, you probably heard me talk about halftime. That's what I'm going to say. I'll be happy for those of you who heard it already, but I'd like to share it with the people who are joining me right now. Jay's biggest issue was the fact that he got arrested, and he was in a down point in his life. And right as he was about to get sentenced, the judge pretty much told him in the kindest words that he could. He said, "Jay, I want you to think of the first part of your life before you ended up here as the first half. And what's going to happen after you get out of jail, that's going to be the second half of your life. So I want you to view your time in prison as halftime. That's what this is going to be. Your time in prison is going to be halftime. You're going to reassess the game. You're going to get back into the game after you're done with halftime, and you're going to figure out your opponent, and you're going to get out there, and you're going to do what it takes to win. That's what it is that you're going to do." And I listened to that story, and I thought about it, and that's what I viewed everything that happened to me for 2 years and 5 months after I heard that story. That was very, very reflective. And that was halftime, and now it's the second half of the game. And somebody told me something very, very interesting, and I'm going to give the man credit. I know some people like him, some people don't, but Mr. Rush Limbaugh, who said it best, "No one ever won anything by defending it." And I'm not here to defend something I didn't do. I'm not here to defend my time in prison. I'm here to attack it. And I'm coming out guns blazing. Metaphorically speaking, but I'm coming out guns blazing. Everything in my path will be blown away. That's it. It's simple as that. I'm not going to sit back and allow everybody else to do what it is that I've allowed them to do to me for years. And that was the big problem. I sat back and allowed things to happen. I let the bricks fall where they may. And no one ever lived by doing that. No one ever lived by doing that. No one ever lived successfully by doing that. I thought that I should just be a cog or a wheel in the, whatever, you know, the whole saying. I thought that I should just be a part of the whole system, that I shouldn't make waves. But I love that line, you know. I don't stand in anybody's shadow. I cast them. And I like that saying. And I think that's where we're going to be for the duration, you know, until God calls me, until God comes a calling. So it's only right that I get on the line with my good friend. Is this who I think it is? Is my good friend Gene Pinkham? Hello? I feel like I lost him. Oh, don't tell me we lost him. Well, it's quite possible we lost him. No big deal. Well, the phone calls are coming in. I hope you're all out there and you're listening. Please do. The number is 347-308-8701. I'm going to talk about pretty much the case, where it's been, my trial. What happened, where we are today, where I intend to be very, very soon. And get a fill of all of that right here on Reese on the Radio, on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, please give a call at 347-308-8701. Oh, did we get Gene back? Looks like we got Gene back there. Hold on. Let's see if we got Gene back. Hello, Gene, are you there? Hey, are you, Gene, are you there?
Yeah, Reese, it keeps dropping off.
Well, I apologize, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing swell. This is great to hear you back on the air. All right, we haven't missed a beat. We're having guns blazing, and we don't knock. We're coming right through the door.
That's exactly what it is. Where are you at? Are you at a party? Or are you at our Italian social club?
I'm in a secret room in an undisclosed location, and I slept.
How would I find people up in Malden? And please send them my love.
I certainly will. Actually, we scored a new meal last night. Gary Christensen, who I believe you met him several times.
Yes.
And he was asking for you. And big changes in Walden with the city council, unfortunately. I was not one of them. But,
yes, I know.
But I'm not giving up. If you don't give up, I don't give up.
That's right, exactly.
We got a lot of good. I see a lot of good feedback on Facebook about people that were going to be listening in tonight. I didn't know what topics you were going to discuss. I figured you're just going to reacquaint yourself with everybody, anyways.
Listen, it's the Iowa caucus. It was the appropriate time to come back on the air.
You know what? Great timing. We have the only presidential candidate that I have my picture in the newspaper with is the front runner. And that was in the Malden Evening News. So, you know, I really am holding the health care thing against Nick because I think it was an egregious violation of, get this, the 13th Amendment.
Wow.
Yes. The amendment that outlawed slavery also had some ancillary things that went along with it. Among them, indentured servitude and peonage.
That's correct. That's 100%. That's funny. No one's even approached it from that angle.
And I'm surprised that organizations like Citizens for Limited Taxation and Government in Massachusetts didn't go off the run on that. I'm very surprised. Well, Barbara Anderson, we backed them because the tidal wave towards health care for everybody, I just blew away all the constitutional arguments against requiring me as a condition of remaining a citizen of Massachusetts, I have to sign a contract with an insurance industry representative. What else do I have to buy? They use the argument that we require everybody to have auto insurance. No, they don't. I know plenty of people that have driver's licenses. They don't have to have auto insurance.
That's right.
They have a car. But they can rent one, and they can borrow one. You could borrow my car. You didn't have a, I don't know. Did you leave a license?
It's interesting that you say that, Gene. We're on the phone with Gene Pinkham, my good friend Gene Pinkham, our good friend Gene Pinkham, as I always refer to him. Number's 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the radio. Gene, hold on for a second. I'm going to put you on hold because I want to get to some of the topics that I wanted to get into, but I am going to pull you back in on the air. I promise I will. Just hold on for you, okay?
Okay. Oh, wow, that's loud.
It's Reese on the radio, and what I want to talk about, and we're going to all in there. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. Because I was so versed in politics on Rikers Island, my nickname, and everybody in jail kind of gets one. If you look like John Legend, your name was John Legend. If you, you know, if you look like DMX, your name was DMX. If you, you know, if you look like Rocky Balboa, your name was Rocky. You know, that was the thing. My nickname in jail, as you can imagine, was politics. And I'm serious. That was, I don't know how many times I would walk somewhere and, you know, be on visiting day and somebody walk by and I'd be like, hey, what's up, politics? And, you know, I guess, you know, people who understand know what it is that I'm talking about. But I wanted to spend this, at least this hour, because I know a lot of you didn't get an opportunity to hear or to understand what it was that took place. And the breakdown of my story, although you can look it up and read the media's interpretation of it. And again, when you're dealing with the media, you're dealing with papers or radio and television, it's a 5-minute soundbite. So you tell the story. The story goes, you know, rape, child, radio host. And that's all you get. So pretty much the breakdown is this, and I'll tell you, please try to follow along because it is a little convoluted. It turns out that in April of 2008, April 25th to be exact, the young lady who accused me was 15 and a half years old, got into an argument with her mother about some failing grades. In the middle of that argument, apparently based on the testimony that happened at trial, that the young lady told her mother that she was raped. Now, I can only give you what I assess from that, but you make your own assumptions. So anyway, so in the middle of their argument about this quote-unquote failing grade, whatever it was, at this school, the witness turns around and says that, you know, oh, you don't understand what I've been through, blah, 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 I got raped. Mom goes fanatic, what mother wouldn't? Who raped you? My name comes out of this young lady's mouth. Well, when did this happen? In 2004. October of 2004. So, 6 months later, after what they call a thorough investigation, I get arrested. October 22nd, 2008. I'm hauled in handcuffs. I spend the night in jail. I go to the courtroom. I meet my lawyer, a gentleman by the name of Mishkin. I want to say Paul, but I could get may have his name wrong. But you can look him up. His name is Paul Mishkin, I believe. Came downstairs to another man. Seemed very, very bright, very, very intuitive. And that was the first I had ever heard exactly it happened. Now, remember, I'm giving you info that I never, ever got. But let me give you a breakdown. Anyway, so Mr. Mishkin comes in and he asks me, tells me these are the charges against you. And I'm asking, when are they saying this happened? And Paul Mishkin says October, between October 1st and September, I mean, October 1st and whatever, September or October, whatever it was. Whatever it is October 31st, between October 1st and October 31st. Anyway, month of October of 2004. The first thing I do is look at Mishkin and I go, I wasn't even living in New York. I moved out of New York late June of 2004. I was living and working in Hartford, Connecticut since April of 2004. I was commuting back and forth to work in 2004 since February. But they said, well, that's what the charges are. Well, I told everybody, look it up. There's an apartment lease at Fountain Village. There's employment records with Clear Channel in Hartford, Connecticut. No one cared to look that up, but I sat in jail, and I sat in jail, and I sat in jail. Not until May 14th of 2010, and I'm telling you the truth, folks, October 22nd, I'm arrested. May 14th, 2010 is when I found out the details of what I'm alleged to have done. In other words, the police report. Reading the police report went a little something like this. And then proceeded to rape my stepdaughter. That's what they said. That's what this witness said. But then when they got on the stand, said she never told the police any of that. Completely changed the story around. Said that the police officer got it all wrong, and the police officer ended up being the only witness in my defense. That's it. But a jury went back there, and 11 people found me not guilty. One guy refused to budge for his own reasons, and I understand that. But my bail was lowered from $100,000 cash to $20,000. Here we are. I got out on April 2nd of 2011. But let's be truthful, folks. I'm not free. By no means, until this is over. And I intend to fight this until it's over. Now, some people can't do that, because I know what it is that happens when you get such a heinous charge. You automatically believe somebody accuses you of something, you immediately ask the other person. You do it with your children. Johnny hits Timmy. Timmy runs and says, Mommy, Daddy, Johnny hit me. You look right at Johnny. You go, did you do it? You don't check the veracity of Timmy. Timmy must be telling the truth if he says he was assaulted. But Johnny's probably looking at you like you're a knucklehead. All he had to do was say that he did it, that I did it. That's all he had to do. He didn't have to produce any evidence. All he had to do was say that I did this act to him. So what do you think it is when somebody turns around and comes to you 3.5 years later and says that they got raped? 3.5 years. Oh, but the story gets better. inside the precinct, the witness brought a best friend. The best friend speaks to the detective, and the best friend tells the detective, and I quote, "I can't believe this keeps happening to her." Police officer looks at her and says, "What the hell are you talking about?" This is April 25th, 2008. Detective says to the best friend, "What are you talking about?" "Well, she told me she just got raped 2 months ago, in February of 2008. Police officer brings the witness back in and says, "What? Wait, you're here talking to me about a 3.5-year-old rape? What about 2 months ago?" The witness says, and I quote, "I am not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about what happened in 2004. I'm not discussing it." Not anything like, "No, that never happened. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's a liar. That's crazy." None of that. The witness says, and I quote, "I'm not here to talk about that." Therefore, a that exists. No red flags. Not one. The number is 347-308-8701. Again, the number is 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the radio. I'm going to take a quick break because I must. Sometimes I get a little beside myself. I'm already sweating up a storm. Tell your friends, Reese on the radio is live on the air right now. And I'm taking calls, I'm taking questions, I'm taking everything. Whatever you want. Again, it's Reese on the radio, 347-308-8701. And we'll be back.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Well, the Democrats' way of running this country is to go tell us all how we ought to make sacrifices. God, they're great on that stuff. But they're all going to have us over the hill to the poorhouse. We ain't going to be able to drive over there because we ain't got no gas. So we're going to have to walk it.
Oh, the Reader's Digest says walking is very good for you.
Oh, ain't that lovely? The Reader's Digest can always put a little joy into poverty. Listen, my whole point is this whole thing with the energy and everything. This is all a conspiracy. Don't you know that? It's a conspiracy there. Listen, For years, all our lives, they've been telling us to go out and buy stuff that use energy. You know, all electrical stuff. Like electric toasters, electric ovens, electric stove, electric stereo, electric TV, electric race, electric hair blower, electric knives, electric every damn thing. Not to mention the cars. And now, after all the big corporations there make the billions and billions of dollars worth of profits, signals, wham, they're changed. And after telling us for years that we can't live without this junk, now they tell us that we gotta live without it. The country is going straight into the dumper.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
All right, we're back at Reese on the Radio. The number is 347-308-8701. I'd like to welcome all of you out there who are listening all over the globe. Look at me. I'm already global. All of you all over the globe, the world listening just to my voice. Like you don't have better things to do. No, I'm kidding. But we're back. And I know a lot of you are probably saying to yourself, like, how does this guy... You know, how does he put up with it? Because trust me, I get it all the time. How do you put up with it? How did you deal with it?
You know, this was, you know,
it's a rock, literally, to the side of the head. You know, I couldn't imagine something, murder. But for some odd reason, I know this is a psychological thing, but I'll be honest with you, the most heinous crime in the world is to abuse a child. Okay? That's it. Bottom line. You can kill a guy and get more leniency than abusing a child. Look at Casey Anthony. Point. Point made. Okay? So if anybody understands the significance of that, I do. As an advocate for children who understands what it's like, anybody who knows my history knows my background, my abuse when I was job. Okay? My two biggest charities to support are abused children and homelessness. Dealt with both of them. And both of them has a child. Homelessness when I was a teenager. So it's nothing new. So to understand that, pretty much you can understand there's no way in hell that that's in my DNA. That's in my makeup. I'm not some buffoon and I'm not some animal and I'm not some monster. In spite of what some idiots say. And they know who they are. But see, no one wanted to really, really look at the facts. They didn't care about the facts. Nobody ever does. We don't care about sensationalism is what sells. Understandably so. I'm in the media business, so I get it. Sometimes you just have to go a little over the top to get people to pay attention. That's what the media does. Sometimes you have to drag it out a little bit. Maybe you have to be a little extreme. Maybe you have to be a little volatile. I will admit, sometimes I've been a little volatile, probably in my opinion. Not so much about the story, but more so about my opinion. I've been outraged at times where I don't need to be. I admit, maybe I feel better when I'm angry. That's for another. Maybe that's tomorrow. Maybe that's Therapy Thursday. But anyway, that being said, was that this person, no matter who it is that they are, and trust me when I tell you, I'm not sitting by stewing in my juices waiting for this person to have, you know, whatever, bad luck, bad karma. I'm not. I've made my peace with this individual. God be with her. Because I don't care about any of that. That's not my place. This isn't a situation where somebody did something to you and you exact some sort of revenge. Because that's never what this is about. Because I only care about one thing. The truth. I care about justice. I care about my name being cleared. I care about getting to the bottom of what the real deal is. Now, we know that the witness is never, ever. She's never, ever going to come clean. Never. Never. Forget about it not being in their DNA. Never going to come clean. Because they can't. Because it's just too damaging to come clean. The bridge is too far. So we're over that. I spent 2 years saying to myself, begging myself, before I got into that trial, well, she, I mean, I don't know. I mean, can a person really just get on that stand? And like, can they really go out there and do it? Does someone really have that within them? If they know it's going to cost a person 25 years in jail, can they do it? Can a person do that and feel good? Maybe not feel good about it, but be okay with that, be able to sleep at night. That I'm going to send somebody to jail for a lie. Just because I was trying to save my ass off of a biology grade. Can a person do that? That's what was running through my mind. But again, and again, it was beating me up because I was going, please, God, whatever you can, please, find it in her heart. I think she's a Christian or a Catholic. Please, like, touch her in some way and let her know let her know the error of her ways. Please, save me from this. Save me from this hell. Never happened. And I had to really, really stop caring about what it is that she said on that stand. I just had to go in there and face it. And I had to go in there and fight. Because you don't win any fights. Again, back to Rush Limbaugh. No one ever won anything by defending it. No one. No one ever won anything. And I wasn't defending anything because I didn't do anything. There's nothing to defend. If I was going to defend something, I could defend what I did. I did nothing. So it's nothing to defend. So you had to go out there and you had to fight. You had to save my name. Then I had to stop caring who it is who said that my name was Mud. I had to not care that Boston Herald put me on the cover of the paper looking like, ugh. I really, really love that picture, though. But they put me on the cover of the paper, I look like a monster. I look like a nappy-headed monster. That evil scowl on my face with a pushed back widow's peak. You can see it online. Look up Reese on the radio. You'll see the picture. I put it on my website. I see that picture, and even I said to myself, yeah, put that picture up. Yeah, nobody's going to believe it then. And some people did. Some people did. They contacted my friends, my family. They sure enough did. No evidence whatsoever. Just an accusation. It was enough. There are people out there that won't touch you. That's why I even looked at the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case and I said the same thing. You know, Dominique Strauss-Kahn, what was his biggest flaw? Guy likes sex. With a lot of people. With a lot of random people. Yes, it's a little skeevy. All right, again, that's him. I can't judge him. They were quick to jump, weren't they? They were sure enough quick to jump. And what about Heidi Jones, ladies and gentlemen? Weathercaster on WABC in New York? I mean, in fact, you know what? I can break this down. Forget about Dominique Strauss-Kahn for a second. Let's go back to the most important things. I want you to hear this because it will baffle the hell out of you. You know, there's Bjorny Gonzalez, Heidi Jones, Domnell Ndonye, the nun from Brooklyn. And I forget her name because I had it written down. There's a nun in Brooklyn. Now, all of these people, within 5 years, made major, major, major news stories claiming that they had been raped. Well, let's break them down. Bjorny Gonzalez, she got into a fight with her friends after she left them at a party and drove off with another man, came back, her friends were angry, they got into a fight, they wanted to kick her ass. And because she didn't want to get beat up, she claimed that William McCaffrey raped her. William McCaffrey, because he had a felony, locked him up immediately. He lost at trial and got 25 years. 4 years later,
Miss Bierny Gonzalez goes to her priest, because now she's married. She's found God. Goes to her priest and makes a confession and says, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I put a man in jail for a rape he didn't commit." The priest looked at her like a fool and said, "Hey, check this out there, dumbass. What do you think? You're going to get a couple of Hail Marys and Our Fathers and that's it? We're done? What are you coming here for? You thought that was it? The man's going to rot in jail for 25 years and you're just going to come. What you do the right thing." So he tells her to go down there and tell the prosecutor in New York that she lied. She recants the story. What does the district attorney's office do? So what? We got our man. And they don't care. And they don't. District attorney's office is not in the business of finding evidence to clear somebody. It's their job to convict. "Well, this looks like that might clear, John. Well, get rid of it." That's pretty much, you know, you may think it's an unfair characterization of them, but tell me, come on. You think the district attorney's office is to find out the truth? "Hey, John, these fingerprints don't look like his over here by the weapon. All right. But we still think he did it, right?" They're not in the business of exonerating suspects. That's not what they do. Heidi Jones says that she was raped in Central Park. Do you know what Central Park is right now? Central Park is Orwellian right now. There's a camera everywhere. She says that she's jogging through Central Park. She says that a Hispanic man dragged her while she was jogging and tried to rape her. And then months later, met her downtown at her apartment and threatened her again after he says he found out that she went to the police. Turns out all a hoax. Even though she got police escorts to walk her dog, to go to dinner, to go to work. Police escorts and rides. They were her personal cab service. She was the weather girl. No offense to weather girl. But come on. They're searching around for a Hispanic man. What does she get? What does she get? She got 9 days community service. Bierny Gonzalez, by the way, to go back to her in the first story, William McCaffrey gets out in 4 years. Bierny Gonzalez, 1 year. You're supposed to get three years. 1 to 3 at least, for every time you lie. To police, to the grand jury, on the stand. 3 years for every time you lie. Perjury, all three. 3 years apiece. 1 to 3. Nothing. 1 year. Andanye, I think it's Damnell Andanye, the girl in Hofstra University, claims she was raped by 5 boys at Hofstra University. One of the boys pulled out his camera phone and took a video of the whole thing. She's directing them, laughing and giggling. Boys were put in jail for $250,000 apiece, but one boy got away, showed a lawyer the video. Girl got 6 months. 6 months. Therapy. The number's 347-308-8701. I've talked long enough. Let's take a call. Hey, what's up, it's Reese. Who's on the line? Hello, Mary?
Hey, Bill.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am having a great day. I'm glad that the show has finally started. You know, it's for me, it's an exciting day just because I finally get to sweat it out on the air. This is something I've been really, really looking forward to doing.
I know you have. You finally get to do what you were meant to do.
Well, now, listen, let me ask you a question, Mary. As a woman, I need to ask you this. Now, you heard the three cases that I just mentioned. Now, as a woman, look, you know, I don't want to get into your personal life. I'm not trying to go there, but I'm just saying, all things considered, don't you think that there should be something done for somebody who makes those kind of false claims?
Most definitely. You should not be able to basically ruin people's lives and not have any repercussions. It's just, well, it's not acceptable.
See, now here's where I'll go.
I'll counter that. I'll be devil's advocate here because I'm willing to say this. I don't believe that you've ruined somebody's life. I understand that people like to use that sort of cliche, you know, this, you know, it ruins my life. Yes, it is. It ruins your reputation. It does a number on your reputation. But I don't think it ruins your life because, you know, you can come back from these kind of allegations. Look, if you did it, you're a scumbag and you need to, I mean, literally, I'm sorry, I'm willing to go there. If you did it, you know, yes, may all hell crash on your head. But there are people out there that are using this as a weapon. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's where I think there needs to be an attention brought to.
There are people out there that are using this as a weapon, and it is the responsibility of our so-called justice system to take proper action on those that are using this as a weapon and misusing our funds for police to keep people safe from things like this.
Well, you know what?
No one can
keep anyone safe from somebody falsifying a rape claim. But let me look at it this way. I mean, I want you to look at it this way, or at least consider this. When the police investigate a murder, when the police investigate a robbery, when the police investigate a theft, a forgery, whatever it is, you know, identity, whatever it is they do, police officers are bound by the rule of evidence. What they do is they go out there, they fingerprint, they swab, do what they have to do. Rape, sex assault, is the only crime where police arrest before investigating. The only crime. And I would say that, okay, if you're suggesting that the crime is more heinous than murder, which would be ridiculous, but if you're saying that the crime is more heinous, considering the fact that it's more heinous, wouldn't that prompt you to do proper investigation?
Exactly.
Okay, I guess I'm talking there. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
What did you say?
No, I was saying, I guess I just answered my own question.
You did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why that isn't. And, Mary, I don't know if you know these statistics. You know, I talked about this when I first came home, that a woman by the name of Linda Feinstein, and you were in Queens during this time, so I know you remember this, the Central Park jogger case. She was the prosecutor in the Central Park jogger case. And in the Central Park jogger case, she said, I think she wrote a book some years later, like 1993, called Sexual Violence. And in the book, she cites that of all the rape claims that she received while she was a prosecutor in New York City, she said 5% of them were false claims. Now, some 10 years later, in 2003, maybe 2006 even, she's quoted in an article in Cosmopolitan, an article called Why Women Lie About Rape. And in that article, she claims out of 4,000 rape claims that she saw over, half of them simply didn't happen. Now, how the hell do you go from 5% to 50% in 10 years?
Yeah, that's a long shot.
You know, I can understand that if it moderately increased, you know, 10 years ago it was only 5%, but we're finding that more women are using this as a weapon, and it's about 15%. But you're going to tell me that it's out of 4,000 rape claims, 2,000? That's incredible.
It is incredible, especially at the fact that all you have to do is say, I've been raped. And I'm not saying by any means that for women out there that have been raped and have been sexually assaulted, and it has happened to me before, but I won't get into my personal business, but I've been a victim, and I would never, ever use that as a weapon towards anybody, just on a human-to-human basis, regardless whether I know you well, don't know you well. We've talked about this, this human-to-human basis feelings that I have. You don't do that to somebody, and you should not be able to get away with it when you have done that to someone.
Well, I'm wondering, as a woman, does it offend you that women do that with the three cases I just cited, I mean, that last case with a Damnell, I always forget how to pronounce her name, but the girl at Hofstra University. I mean, she has a boyfriend. She leaves her boyfriend to go to a party. She ends up in a bathroom with five guys. Five guys? Now, I can understand someone might assume that is, but the story that even scares me even more is that when she comes out of wherever she's from and the boyfriend shows up, the boyfriend sees her, you know, like she said, the boyfriend said her face was sweaty and her hair was kind of messy, and she had this just had sex look on her face, like on her person, was the words that he used in the New York Post. And he said when he asked her what the hell's going on, he knew, and she immediately said, "I just got raped." So he said, "Well, we got to call the security." He flipped. And her response to him was, "No, no, 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 no. Don't call them." He said, "What are you, crazy? You just got raped. Of course I'm calling." So the whole reason why the police got involved is because of the boyfriend.
So, yeah, because instead of her being able to say, "I went in the bathroom and just had sex with five guys," or "I did whatever it was that I did, I cheated on you, I'm busted, oh well, shit happens. I don't know if I'm allowed to."
No, you're not. Thank you.
Sorry.
Right.
Things happen. Okay, sorry. Bleep. Things happen. You know, I am who I am. This is what I've done. Instead of owning up to what you've done, you go and make these accusations. And then, like you said, one of the guys ended up, you know, recording it on his phone and all of that. And everything came to fruition anyway. Well, not fruition, rather. Everything came to light anyway. The truth came to light anyway.
Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Why put yourself or anyone else through all of this hassle, drama, craziness for in the end, the truth is going to come out regardless.
You're absolutely right. And you know, the later story afterwards in an interview that the young lady did afterwards, she said that in essence, and this is the only way, I'm not even paraphrasing her. I'm just telling you what the story read, and it was simple and plain. I put four boys in prison with $250,000 bails because I didn't want to be called a tramp. I was going to ruin these four boys' lives just so no one would call me a tramp. That's
regardless whether someone calls you a tramp or not, you already have done things to make yourself feel like you're a tramp, so you have to lay with that every night.
Well, exactly, and that's the bottom line. Is like, see, this is why I try to get people to understand. Here was a girl who got into a situation because of a failed grade, and because they were being scolded for their behavior, whatever it may have been, you turn around and you say, "I need to get out of it. Yeah, let me screw up somebody's life. You know, let me destroy somebody's life, because then the attention will be off me and the stuff that I've done, and then everybody will love me and pay attention to me and nurture me, but I can ruin a life to do that." Now, I don't...
See, I think that things run a lot deeper than, I mean, there has to really be something messed up going on in your brain or in your life. There, you have to be scarred or something to do something like that.
You're a freaking coward.
You're
a freaking, Mary, you're a freaking coward. You're a coward. There's no other way to describe it. You're a coward. That means that you do things, you behave a certain way, you do not know how to be accountable. We live in a society where people are not accountable, and they are not accountable for their behavior. And when they can't be accountable, they blame others because they're cowards. It's that simple. That's the only way that I can even understand it. They are cowards.
I can't say that, you know, if that's how you think of it, you know, then, you know, that's the way that you think of it. I can't say that I just truly believe that they're cowards. I mean, that's definitely a part of it, but there's something is misfiring in your brain when you do something like that to somebody. I mean, no normal human being does that to someone. Not any, to me, that's not normalcy.
Well, you're right. It isn't normal. I understand. Well, some people are willing to call it a psychological breakdown, but I'm not willing to give it that kind of excuse. I just can't do it. Hold on the phone for me, Mary. I'll get back to you. I want to wrap up the hour before we get back in the next hour, because we got a lot of things coming up in the next hour. There are plenty of things we're going to talk about. It's Reese on the Radio. The number is 347-308-8701. Please call in. Say something. Do something. I'm just kidding. If you want to call in, please do. Again, the number is 347-308-8701. It is Reese on the Radio. And we're live. We're here Monday through Friday. That's right, 7 to 10 p.m. I'm glad to be back. I'm happy to be back. I probably wouldn't have guessed that this could happen to me. I'm really, really happy that it has. A little round of applause for me coming home. All right, enough. Anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have to talk about the Iowa caucus. And I'm pretty sure plenty of you got your opinion about that. I just personally think it's a little... Everybody who I want to be there is gone.
Hi, Herman Cain. I miss you.
Really, really do. You have no idea how much I miss you. I miss you so much. It's on the radio.
I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
There was once upon a time that to be a Republican in this area of the country felt a bit like being Gary Cooper in High Noon, outnumbered in a big way. But I remember the story of a fellow who was running for office as a Republican, and he was in a rural area and it wasn't known to be Republican, and he stopped by a farm to do some campaigning. And when the farmer heard he was a Republican, his jaw dropped and he said, "Wait right here till I go get Ma. She's never seen a Republican before." So he got her, and the candidate looked around for a podium from which to give his speech, and the only thing he could find was a pile of that stuff that Bess Truman took 35 years trying to get Harry to call fertilizer. So he got up on the mound, and when they came back, he gave his speech. And at the end of it, the farmer said, "That's the first time I ever heard a Republican speech." And the candidate said, "That's the first time I've ever given a Republican speech from a Democratic platform."
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Have you lost your mind?
I mean, how is it that you can disrespect a man's ethnicity when you know we've influenced nearly every facet of white America, from our music to our style of dress, not to mention your basic imitation of our sense of cool, walk, talk, dress, mannerisms? We enrich your very existence, all the while contributing to the gross national product through our achievements in corporate America. It's these conceits that comfort me when I'm faced with the ignorant, cowardly, bitter, and bigoted who have no talent, no guts. People like you who desecrate things they don't understand when the truth is you should say, thank you, man, and go on about your way. But apparently, you're incapable of doing that. So, and don't tell me to be cool. I am cool. Racial epithets. Why does it always come down to that?
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it. Grab it.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said nada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
All right, guys, it's Reese on the Radio. It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. It's 8 o'clock right here in good old New York City. Yeah, that's where I am now. That's where I'm broadcasting from, right here, good old New York City. The number is 347-308-8701 if you wish to call in, because I'm pretty sure some of you have got some opinions. Some of you have got some things to say. I figured I'd, you know, I don't want to talk about that old craziness that, you know, happened, you know, 3 years ago. I figured I'd give you the update, and now you have it. Well, there's more updates to give you, and I'll give you that at another time. Perhaps we'll do it tomorrow during Therapy Thursday. No, so tomorrow? Is that, no, sorry. What is today? I don't even know what today is. We'll give it on Thursday. Tomorrow's Wednesday. I forgot the days. Because we started it, I thought we started later in the week. But, you know, that's me. Now, I usually get the days right. I'm not that bad. But we do know that it's time for the Iowa caucus. In fact, 8 o'clock right now, That's for 100,000 voters going in to choose their delegates, and the delegates then choose who it is that they're going to pick. And then we'll find out. And, you know, you hear all the hoobla-ha of who's the front runner and what it all means. Whether or not it's going to be Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, Michelle Bachmann, John Hunt. We're not talking about him. Anyway, I think Rick Santorum is going to have a really, really big night. I think he's going to have an impressive night. And look, I'll admit, I wasn't on board with this guy in the beginning. I'm willing to admit it was partially because he really didn't have a lot of name recognition. So I kind of took the, let's just say I took the celebrity approach to all this. We know who Mitt Romney is. We know who Newt Gingrich is. We definitely know who Ron Paul is. You know, Michelle Bachmann, you know, she, I don't want to call her flash in the pan because I don't believe that. You know, she's made some headway. You know, a lot of Republican women have come to the forefront. She, Sarah Palin, you know, and others. And, you know, she makes some noise. And she should. Why not? There are some things about her that I'm not really, really cool with. But, hey, I'll be honest with you. There's going to be a female candidate in the Republican Party. I'm all in. I'm all in. I think they are, truthfully, the strongest in the party. You can say what you think. I could care less if you disagree. I want to hear it. But I think they are. I think Republican women are the strongest because I love seeing the vitriol that comes out of it. I love seeing the way that people respond, especially liberal women. Of the way liberal women respond to Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. They hate them. They hate them. And it's a real simple thing. Real, real simple thing. Michelle Bachmann, believe that it starts in session. Liberal women, not so much. Liberals don't believe that life begins at conception at all. I mean, I don't know what that's about. I don't know why they feel that way. Being women carrying a life in their body, you'd think that they understood the sanctity of life. I would believe that. I would believe that they did. I'm not a woman, so I don't know. But for some odd reason, conservative women seem to hold that near and dear, where liberal women think that it's okay to abort a child. That being said, I wanted to play this audio because people have been talking about it. And people have been arguing about whether or not it's a little of a breakdown. Some may be familiar back then on Fox News. They used to be on an hour, and they had a 9 o'clock. Now it was moved on. And, be a little radical. Now, this is she was talking about Rick Santorum. You may or may not know, but Rick Santorum and his wife, they had a child, and the child expired 2 days after it was born. Rick Santorum and his wife decided, I believe his wife is a neonatal nurse, and because she believed that that life was special, she took that child with Rick Santorum, and they took the child home to be with their other children so they can recognize the life of that child. And it was very, very sad. I'm sure it was very, very sad. Your child has died. This woman carried it for 9 months. You love that child the minute the child is born. I know that feeling. Hey, I loved him, right? Forget about it. My love for him was higher than ever. I considered him a deity. So I can imagine what it was like. You have the child for 2 hours and the child dies. It's got to be crushing. But they wanted their children to be a part of the life, if be it 2 hours. They wanted the child to be a part of their lives. They didn't want to just discard it. And I think Alan Colmes is suggesting that that's what it is they should have done. They lost their child. And you know what? Kid's only 2 hours old. Keep it moving. So I want to play for you what Alan Colmes, the exchange he had with Rick Lowry on Fox News. And you give me your opinion.
You know, the Republicans have speed dated every other Republican, and so there's nobody left except Rick Santorum. But once they get a load of some of the crazy things he said and done, like taking his two-hour-old baby who died right after childbirth home and played with it for a couple of hours so his other children would know that the child was real. I mean,
that's
stuff like
cheap,
that.
That's a cheap shot, Alan.
That's not a cheap shot.
No,
crazy.
It's not.
No,
something
it's not.
That's that personal.
No, it's not a cheap shot.
And that is that personal and
I
personal and
no,
losing
wait,
a child
I didn't interrupt you, Rich.
And
it's
to
not a cheap
mock
shot.
It, to
not,
mock it like that is really beyond the pale
I don't
and
think
beneath
it's beyond
you.
The pale.
You are mocking him. That is
Rich,
that is beneath
you. First of all, I didn't interrupt you, but I'm not mocking him.
I'm interrupting you because what you're saying is contemptible.
Let me know when you're done.
Well, you want me to keep going?
Let me know when you're done.
They lost a child, Alan. That's very serious, and it's not something you should be mocking on
national
TV. I'm
not mocking the losing of the child, but what I'm saying is I think it shows a certain...
So that's what he says. He says, I'm not mocking the death of the child. And he caught himself. Yeah, you're mocking the fact that they took the child home. That's what it was that you were mocking. You said some of the crazy things that Rick Santorum does, like taking a two-hour... The child that only lived for 2 hours is dead and taking it back home to play with. You see, you hear the word to play with, to give the impression that he took a dead baby home to play. It's incendiary, it's insensitive, and it's just plain stupid for him to even suggest it. What do you think that voters are sitting back saying? Oh, wow, Rick Santorum and his family play with dead babies? I'm not voting for him. Why even suggest it? Now, Rick Santorum, of course, replied. And again, as you heard, Alan Colmes, by no means, he'd be contrite. He refused to even back off. I'm not mocking him.
My former partner, friend, Alan Colmes, got in a heated debate with Rich Lowry today. You had lost a child some years ago. It got very heated. You spoke to Alan earlier.
I did.
And tell us.
Well, you know, there's a lot of nasty stuff out there on the Internet. And I'm sure Alan reads a lot of it from the left about Rick Santorum. And my wife wrote a book called Letters to Gabriel about our son, who lived 2 hours and then passed away. And when he died in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m. And we decided to keep in our room to be with him. And in the morning, we packed up and we took our son home to have a funeral at home and then to bury him later that day. We brought him home and we showed him to our children. We wanted to let them know that they had a brother and who he was. And people have criticized us. Karen was a neonatal intensive care nurse for 9 years. And one of the things that Karen taught me and that she learned from that experience was you have to affirm the life of your child. You have to affirm that memory for your children and for you, and to recognize the dignity of that life and to make sure that that child is forever a part of your family.
That's it. That's it. That's all I can say. The dignity of that child. Dignity. That's the whole what is the dignity of that life. 2 hours. 2 hours. And Rick and Karen Santorum said that that child deserved dignity. Now, if I'm going to say where there's a line drawn in the sand between people who are pro-abortion versus people who are pro-life, that is the line. The dignity of that life, be it only for 2 hours. The number's 347-308-8701. James. Hello,
yep.
James. You're on with Reese on the Radio. How you doing, buddy?
How you doing, man? How you doing? I wanted to say congratulations. Welcome back. Good luck. Although
thank
you're not going to need it.
Thank you.
Now, and also...
Hmm?
No, I'm saying, am I off the deep end here?
I did want to bring up the earlier comment about how liberals don't seem to care about abortion or things of that nature, or about the life of a child. No one has ever said that. No one has ever said that, and I take umbrage that it seems that when you ask for the right to choose, people say, oh, well, you're just pro-abortion. No. That's not always the case, and it's not always the answer. But the choice should be yours. My choice should not be taken from me. That's what liberals stand on. But, well, again, you said earlier, sensationalism. Everyone jumps to, oh, well, you know, you just don't like life, or where does life begin? You know, we're not saying anything of that nature. All we're saying is you give me the choice. If it's my child, my body, my choice.
Well, wait a minute. So, are you? So, let me get this right, James. You're telling me that the life of the child.
Hello.
You, James, are you there?
I'm here. You keep breaking up there.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I was probably my microphone.
I can only hear like every other word. Hello?
Are you suggesting now?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you suggesting that the life of the child means nothing?
No, not at all.
So the child has no say, Jamie. When does the child have say?
Well, first and foremost, the child has a say when it's old enough to make an informed decision. It's a child. Until then, and for centuries now, it's been left up to the parents.
So, it's almost a chicken, like which came first, the chicken or the egg sort of argument. You're saying that.
Obviously, the parents do come first. Without the parents, there is no child.
Well, fair enough. But when is that life? Okay, let me give you a perfect example, James. Here's an example, and you may call it way out of left field, but try the question on for size. A woman is on her way to the abortion clinic, hypothetically. Mm-hmm. On the way to the abortion clinic, she's robbed, stabbed, and killed. She's on her way to the abortion clinic, and
mm-hmm.
The man kills the woman and the fetus in the process of robbing her.
Mm-hmm.
Does he get charged with double murder?
I knew that's where you were going with this. I knew that's where you were going with this. And, you know, in life, as you said, there is no black and white, and there's always shades of gray here. However, again, before, even though she was on the way to the abortion clinic, I do believe that if that life is aborted, it's still a life. Okay, so yeah, you deserve to be charged with both lives, yes.
So we charge them with both lives, and if I'm a defense attorney and I find out where she was going that day, couldn't I make a strong argument? Hey, come on, she didn't want that kid anyway. She was on her way. You could charge him with one count of murder, but you can't charge him with two. She was on her way to the abortion clinic. I mean,
yeah.
I could... Can I make that valid argument? I'm pretty sure there's a lawyer or something that would disagree. I think I've got a valid argument here. You know, I mean, call it semantics, but it's enough.
No, I don't even call it semantics. I call it a matter of timing. Until the child was aborted, it's still a life.
So therefore,
that's all to it.
Okay. So all right. Now I'm saying that the suspect in this particular case, yes, did take two lives. Now, I'm going to agree. Absolutely. Both people died. The child, the woman and the fetus. They died. They expired. So, yes, I want to hang them high. I agree. I'm going to count it as a double murder. But if we were using the same argument here, if the fetus is only counted when we want it to be, then it's a slippery slope. James, and that's the point I'm making. It's a slippery slope. We can say that the child is a child when it deems appropriate for us. When you're aborting it, not appropriate.
Because you're still using semantics. You're using words. The thing is, if you're aborting a child, then it has to at least be living. You have to give us at least that. We are acknowledging that it is a life to be aborted.
James, are you suggesting to me that the child is not living? The mother eats, the child eats. The woman's health depends on the life of that child. Are you suggesting?
I never said it. Again,
so it's
said.
A living thing. You said it's not a life.
Of course, yes.
But you're saying it's not a life. Are you suggesting it's not a life?
No, I never said that. And I please don't twist me. I never said that.
Well,
right? I said until it's aborted, it's still a life. Now, I've said this a number of times now.
Okay, well, then I'm just asking. So let's go back to Alan Colmes. Just based on that, what you heard, and let's play it again so that everybody can hear it one more time.
You know, the Republicans have speed dated every other Republican, and so there's nobody left except Rick Santorum. But once they get a load of some of the crazy things he said and done, like taking his two-hour-old baby who died right after childbirth home and played with it for a couple of hours so his other children would know that the child was real. I mean,
that's
stuff like
cheap,
that.
That's a cheap shout out.
Okay, all right. Okay, so to let them know that they're shy. All right, come on, man. Come on.
Yeah, it don't look good for the home team.
Again, and we're talking about Alan Colmes,
yeah.
Who's an extreme liberal. And he said...
Yeah, that was a swing and a miss. I have no defense for that. I really don't. To suggest that you took the baby home to play with it, like it was a doll or something, I think that was just a leap. I think he was going for imagery, and it just went too far. It went way around the bend. Yeah, that's just... I can understand. I personally understand the feeling. Okay, look, it was born. It was family for 2 hours. It's still part of our family regardless. You know, let's honor that instead of just saying, okay, well, it didn't make it. Let's move on.
So
I can understand that. For him to say that the guy was just taking it home to play with, it's just bad sentiment, period.
Actually, you know what? I want to play this for you, James, because this I think, captures exactly who liberals are. You've probably heard this clip before.
Hey, you know...
I think this captures you beautifully, probably with the exception of the God comment. But hold on. Here we go.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
I don't think you're a bore, Jamie. But you do have a textbook liberal agenda. You know, that whole thing about... You know, you and I had an argument this summer, I remember, where you made a claim where you said the rich people need to pay, you know, pay their fair share. I'm not going for that. I don't believe that. That's insanity. But we'll get into that next time. By the way, so here's one last question, because it is the Iowa caucus, and I want to get your opinion on the Iowa caucus and of course about the primary.
Doesn't matter. You're still going to lose.
The number is 347-308-8701. Again, 347-308-8701. I'd love to talk to more liberals other than Kool-Aid Man here. If you've got an opinion, it's Reese on the Radio, live on blogtalkradio.com /Reese on the Radio. James, if I may ask, try this one on for size. I'll get one more opinion from you because I want to talk about this after we come back from the break. there was a piece that Andrea Mitchell of NBC did talking about Iowa and Iowans, for that matter. And I want to get your take on it. I'm going to play the clip, and then I'm going to go to a break, and then I'll get you. I want you to ingest this, because I want to talk about this. I want to talk about something that's very, very important, and something on my website, and it's called the article. You go to ReeseOnTheRadio.com, and on the search engine, type in race war. It's an article called "You've Been Warned: The 21st Century Race War Has Begun." And I want you to hear this article. Now, I wrote that article on November 15th. This piece by Andrea Mitchell just aired 2 days ago, and I want to get your opinion. I'll play it, and then when we come back from the break, I'll get your take on it. Let's play the clip.
Iowa did propel a little-known Southern governor to the Democratic nomination back in 1976.
Jimmy Carter, clearly the winner, scored well, came from nowhere.
And established that Barack Obama could attract white voters.
You have done what the cynics said we couldn't do.
The rap on Iowa, it doesn't represent the rest of the country. Too white, too evangelical, too rural. Still, here, politics are personal.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why we came here today, was just to see what Rick had to say and kind of narrow down our choice.
People are paying attention. Even Democrats like Diane Munns are showing up to hear what the Republicans have to say.
How can you pass this up? I mean, nobody else gets to do this, actually get up close and personal and meet all these people and talk to them. And if you love politics, this is the place to be.
It's the place to be.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
How we ought to make sacrifices. God, they're great on that stuff. But they're all going to have us over the hill to the poorhouse. We ain't going to be able to drive over there because we ain't got no gas, so we're going to have to walk it.
Oh, the Reader's Digest says walking is very good for you.
Oh, ain't that lovely? The Reader's Digest can always put a little joy into poverty. Listen, my whole plan is this whole thing with the energy and everything. This is all a conspiracy. Don't you know that? It's a conspiracy there. Listen, for years, all our lives, they've been telling us to go out and buy stuff that use energy. You know, all electrical stuff. Like electric toasters, electric ovens, electric stove, electric stereo, electric TV, electric race, electric hair blower, electric knives, electric every damn thing. Not to mention the cars. And now, after all the big corporations there make the billions and billions of dollars worth of profits, signals, wham, they're changed. And after telling us for years that we can't live without this junk, now they tell us that we gotta live without it. The country is going straight into the dumper.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
There was once upon a time that to be a Republican in this area of the country felt a bit like being Gary Cooper in High Noon, outnumbered in a big way. But I remember the story of a fellow who was running for office as a Republican, and he was in a rural area and it wasn't known to be Republican, and he stopped by a farm to do some campaigning, and when the farmer heard he was a Republican, his jaw dropped and he said, "Wait right here till I go get Ma. She's never seen a Republican before." So he got her, and the candidate looked around for a podium from which to give his speech, and the only thing he could find was a pile of that stuff that Bess Truman took 35 years trying to get Harry to call fertilizer. So he got up on the mound, and when they came back, he gave his speech. And at the end of it, the farmer said, "That's the first time I ever heard a Republican speech." And the candidate said, "That's the first time I've ever given a Republican speech from a Democratic platform."
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com. All right, guys, we're back. It's Reese on the Radio. And, you know, we're talking about the Iowa caucus and some of the things going on there. You know, front runners, who's behind, who's ahead. I miss you, Herman Cain. I miss you, man. I miss you. You have no idea. I miss you. I miss you. We needed you. Because then it'd be one black man versus the other black man. They can't scream racism. But they're going to scream it now. And I want to get into that. The number is 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the Radio. 347-308-8701. Now, this is Andrea Mitchell, NBC, a couple of days ago, talking about Iowa. And I'll play in that. Let's argue it.
Iowa did propel a little-known Southern governor to the Democratic nomination back in 1976.
Jimmy Carter, clearly the winner, scored well, came from nowhere.
And established that Barack Obama could attract white voters.
You have done what the cynics said we couldn't do.
The rap on Iowa, it doesn't represent the rest of the country. Too white, too evangelical, too rural. Still, here, politics are personal.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why we came here today. It was just
And that's all it is that I need to play. That's all I need to play. Too white, too evangelical, too rural. That's Andrea Mitchell's report. Now, she's come out. There's been an argument. There's been a huge argument all over the press that she says critics say. We don't know who these critics are, but she said critics say that Iowa is too white, too evangelical, too rural. I got one question, just one, to anybody who's willing to answer it. Number's 347-308-8701. So to hell what? Now all of a sudden it's a bad thing? Like that's not Americana? Whoa, they white people here? Come on, give me a break. First of all, Barack Obama won Iowa by 9 percentage points against John McCain in the general election. And 94% of the electorate was white. So what's your point? Why would anybody think that Iowa in no way shows that they're like the rest of America? They're different, it's too white, too evangelical, and too rural. Well, what the hell is the rest of the country then? Oh, I know it. It's too urban. It's too mixed. That's what it is. Oh, and it's got a lot of minorities. We're on the line with James. James, what do you think? You think it was a racist comment to suggest in any way whatsoever that Iowa was too white?
No, because it is too white. As far as I've ever seen, Iowa was white. It's been white for centuries.
What's
for
too
a very
white?
Long time. That's not something to bring it up now. It's not news.
But to say what they're saying is, and this is what I said when I talked about the article. Now, I want to give you an opportunity for you guys to hear the article. If you haven't read it, let me give you just a breakdown of the article. The article is called "You've Been Warned: The 21st Century Race War Has Begun." In a recent poll, it was revealed that President Barack Obama's support, or lack thereof, had been racially split. The bad news is that Obama's ardent supporters fall into the typical cynical scope of reasoning. Although we should live in a world that finds no need to recognize one color, many of his supporters are motivated to protect the president by strictly for reasons associated with race. How do his supporters intend to protect the president from losing 2000? Out with the old and in with the new. I'd like to be the first to admit the theme worked. The demographics of the election proved to be a windfall for this ideology. John McCain was simply out of touch with the country that felt it needed to make history, to prove to the world that it had truly progressed. Electing the first black president would make a huge statement. Considering that narrative, if Barack Obama were to do well as a president, everyone responsible for his election would remind his detractors of how right they were. Should he fail, and he has, go to the extreme damage control. You've heard the constant excuses attributed to the failed economy, inherited, slow economic growth, Wall Street greed, and so on and so on. So what to do if the presidency of Barack Obama begins to wane? Reverse the original narrative, make it about the same superficial point used to elect him, his color. And that, my friends, is exactly what Andrea Mitchell does. Here's the re-election of Barack Obama. Let's not talk about the fact that he won in the general election in Iowa with a 94% electorate, 9% above the all whitey-mighty, John McCain. He beat John McCain by 9 percentage points. 9. Do you know how much Bush beat Gore? By less than a percentage point in Iowa. So if 9% goes to Barack Obama in Iowa in the general election against John McCain from Arizona, I might add, and now you're telling me that it's too white? Now it doesn't matter? The race war has begun.
The race war hasn't begun. It's never ended. When is it ended?
You believe that the war is already. You don't think that the war is going to be personified in the 2012 election?
In the 2012, well, that's what they said about the 2011 election. That's what they said about 2008.
No, they didn't.
Of course they did. Now, I don't know what circles you ran in, but I was like, well, what I heard was there was two sides. One, that if he won, white people were going to pull up stakes, we're going to hunker down and do everything they can to make sure that he only had one job. Oh, wait. Didn't they say that?
Yes, but who doesn't?
Okay. Then there was the other time. Hold on. That if he didn't win, we were going to riot. So there was.
Hold on. First of all, think of what you just said. You said the circles that you run in, you were saying, and I quote, that if white people lost in this election, if the black man won, white people were going to do whatever it is that they could to make sure he was a one-term president, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you said that if he didn't win, that his supporters were going to riot in the streets. So I'm asking you, which one is civil disobedience?
Which one is civil disobedience?
Which one is civil? Because if I were to look at the contrast of what you just made, if Obama loses, then everyone's rioting in the street. And who's going to be rioting the street? Uneducated Negroes and Hispanics. That's exactly who's going to be rioting the street. Uneducated Negroes and Hispanics who say it was all about race. They're not going to think about policy. They're not going to think about the rest of the country. They're just going to see his color.
It's amazing that you keep saying that it's not about race. It's not about race. It's not about race. And yet, the Republican Party has brought up race every chance they got.
Really? Where was this?
They just didn't say it was about race. First, it was his name. Oh,
yeah.
It sounded too non-white. That's about race, whether you say it or not.
James.
Then it was his education. Oh,
James.
How did a black man get that far? No No, but they didn't say it was about race. But every chance and every turn you make, they do things that are pretty racial, because no other president has been this criticized, this put under such a microscope.
When have you heard anyone suggest that his name was non-white? No one ever said that. There's not one article that you can find that his name was non-white. In fact,
it was Barack Hussein. Everyone made a big to-do about Hussein. Barack Hussein Obama, or just Barack Obama, the name of Barack Obama himself, or that alone.
James, if there were people
And yes, no one said that it was not white enough, but they kept bringing it up. It's Hussein. Well, if it's not white enough for you, then why are you bringing it up? Because you don't say it's racial doesn't mean it's not racial.
Just because you say it's not racial doesn't mean it's not racial. So let me try this on for size. Okay. So you're telling me that the Republican Party made it its business to attack Barack Obama on his race?
Among other things, yes.
Among other things. What happened to Herman Cain?
Herman Cain? Herman Cain self-imploded, okay?
How?
Because he made it, as a matter of fact, Herman Cain made it about being black when he started singing old Negro spirituals.
James, he is a Southern black.
He is a Southern black. Well, if race is not a part of the race for president, then why are you singing Negro spirituals? And he's a Republican, is he not? So we can't play the card, but you can.
James, he's from the segregated South. It's a part of his. That's got nothing to do with race. It's got to do with his history.
It has nothing to do with. You just said segregated South, and that has nothing to do with race.
Hold on. Segregated South is a part of our history, and singing a Negro spiritual is a part of his, Now, how about this one? Try this one off for size.
Mm-hmm.
You said Herman Cain self-imploded. How?
How? Well, once again, not only is he's a black man, a Republican. Again, so totally out of touch. That he just started saying things.
Who's the party of segregation? Who's the party of segregation?
I'm sorry, what?
Who is the party of segregation?
I don't know. Why don't you tell me, since you obviously know more.
Democrats. That's right. Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right. Excuse me. Democrats. Who
filled the question? No.
Look
it up. Last I checked, we were segregated, all right?
Segregated blacks in this country were segregated by, look them up. Look up George Wallace.
Segregation is over. It's done.
But hold on. Who was?
We don't need it. You're saying it's not about race, and yet you bring up things like segregation. You bring up, you say one thing, and then you
do
a total 180 in the same breath.
James, you're saying that the Republicans are racist. But
no,
yet,
don't tell me what I'm saying. All right?
Are you saying that Republicans are racist?
What I'm saying is race has come up a lot on both sides. So I'm so tired of hearing from the Republicans that it's not about race. And then they use race every chance they get. They just hide it better. Or not even. It's veiled attempts at hiding it.
Okay, so if you believe that, James, let me ask you this. If Barack Obama goes on a Spanish-speaking television radio station and tells the Hispanics that they need to punish their enemies, that's his language. If Barack Obama puts out a campaign during the midterm elections in 2010, where he tells people to come out in droves for Democrats in the midterm elections, and he targets, watch this, women, minorities.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. He targets
women
and minorities. Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. And unions. He didn't go.
Oh, and unions.
Then, wait.
Okay.
And then, hold on.
Unions,
then,
and Republicans have never done this.
Hold on. It gets
Republicans
better.
Republicans have always got on their little stump box, their little stumps, and said nothing about women's rights. They've said nothing about.
No. They've never used it. You don't use it in that kind of tactic. Hold on. How about this?
You don't use it, and no Republican ever has. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Not an argument. It's not an argument about whether or not a Republican has. It's a question about
whether or not you're going to detract from someone, James. All right. If you're going to detract one, you better detract them both.
James, let me finish my point. What my point is this. What did Maxine Waters and the Congressional Black Caucus get upset about with Barack Obama earlier in the year? What was their big argument? The big argument was that Barack Obama, in fact, it wasn't earlier this year. I think it was it was earlier this year. Their biggest argument the Congressional Black Caucus made, and we're talking about the Congressional Black Caucus, they made an argument that Barack Obama had not visited what? Any African-American towns. They said, we're struggling too. Why wasn't he visiting them? Because he wanted to get white support. So if anybody's made this about race, it's Democrats. And just so I can make this last point, I want you to hear this. It's very important that you understand this. Look at the Hispanic coalition, right? Every Hispanic group. I want you to look at the NAACP. I want you to look at GLAAD. And I want you to look at NOW. Now, think about what I'm about to tell you, okay? Hispanics have a group that literally marginalize everybody else out of the picture and say that we are here for Hispanics. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, right? And lastly, what was the last one I said? I said NAACP, GLAAD. I feel like Rick Perry now because I can't remember the third. Okay. NAACP, GLAAD, the Hispanic Coalition, and there's obviously one more, and I don't know. Oh, and NOW, National Organization of Women. Now, you look at every one of those groups, every one of them, who do they ardently support? All liberals. But what I find incredible, that no one seems to notice, that there are no Republican groups that segregate themselves based on race or gender. Only liberals do that. You name one Republican group that segregates itself.
Because, you know what? No, you know what? You're right. You're
name
right.
One.
But
name one.
I don't see many women, until like recently where it's become en vogue, I didn't see many women in the upper echelons of the Republican Party. We never see any Hispanics. We barely see any blacks. And, you see what happens with them.
James?
You know,
James? James?
Yes.
They don't
marginalize, but they don't let them in either.
Marco Rubio. Alan West. Hold on. Marco Rubio. Alan West. Michelle Bachmann. Sarah Palin. I mean, those
again,
are all black
Latinos and women. Again, this is just recently. And because of the fact that it was the liberal groups that made so much noise and got so much power and made themselves so known and so out there that they had to change, that the Republican Party had to either fall in line or fall behind.
James, the only party that's ever been the party of inclusion, in fact, it's in their, it's kind of their nickname, is the Republican Party. They're the party of inclusion.
Okay.
I'm
the one who's drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, you're the one drinking the Kool-Aid. You have to be. You're killing me sometimes, guys. The number's 347.
No, you kill me sometimes with this. Because really.
James, you're just too funny to me. The number's 347-308.
Okay. Good luck, man.
8701. Thank you so much, man, for checking out. By the way, Jamie, I got an email that I want you to hear. Your show is great. Jamie is great. He sure as blank holds his own with you, but you're getting a little condescending. That was me. That was the email they sent about me, that I'm getting a little condescending, but they said that you sound great. I don't know what that's supposed to be. And I'll have to email that person a letter and maybe send an angry note or something like that. I find you hilarious. Please tell your wife I say hello. Happy New Year, man. It was great seeing you for Christmas, and I hope you have a great New Year this year.
All right, man. Bye.
All right, man. Anyway, it's Reese on the radio. Number is 347-308-8701. That's 347-308-8701. We've got plenty of things to talk about and get to. Let's get JC back on the line. Hey, JC, you still there?
Yeah, man, I'm still there. Wow.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think I'm going, if I'm really, really going to do this later on, on a terrestrial level, I think I'm going to have to pull Jamie in. I'm going to have to pull James in. You think so, right?
Yeah, the chemistry is unbelievable there.
Yeah, you know, that's what happens when you know someone since the sixth grade.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's going on. Anyway, what's going on with you? You listening to the show?
I'm listening. I'm standing by. I'm screening calls, doing what I have to do.
Yeah.
I'm kind of mad that I'm really not that deep into politics where I could argue with you guys. There's a couple of times I did want to just jump in.
You should have.
No. Let me stay in my lane because I'm more on the crazier side in the next hour.
Well, yeah, we're gonna have some fun. There's some great stuff that we're gonna bring up in the next hour. I've got this very, very ridiculous story that came out of Boston. I believe it's in Chatham. I could be wrong. I'm kind of winging it right now on where the
Boston
town is. But I'm not going to tell you what this story is. I'm not even going to give you a heads up. I'm just going to let you hear the actual news report as it went on the I think it was WBZ up in Boston who covered the story. It was amazing. Has we gotten any reports on the Iowa caucuses at all? Because I'm trying to look
up. I'm not getting anything yet. Nothing whatsoever.
I cannot.
I think it's a little too early still.
Well, they started at 8 o'clock. I was hoping that we would get something within the hour. I'm hoping that we get something before the end of the show because I'd like to see what the naysayers say. Drudge Report had their own personal poll. Now, I never, ever liked these things. I don't know why they do them. But if you go to drudgereport.com, which is one of my favorite sites to go to, they have what Drudge called the Drudge Caucus. And you got to go on and vote for whomever you want. And they even still, you want to laugh, they have Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, John Hudson, Ron Paul, Rick Perry, Mitt Romney, and Rick Santorum. And here are the results thus far on Drudge Report's their Drudge Caucus. We got Ron Paul with 1 million, and we've got, hold on, is this right? That number's not right. Oh, we're talking percentage. I got it. Okay. So Ron Paul's in the lead, and Santorum comes in second, Romney in third, and Newt Gingrich in fourth, and then Rick Perry comes out at the bottom. They don't even tell. What's this? Okay, we just got a flash where I believe that there's actually been some updates. Let me see what this is, because this is going to be some breaking news if it really happened. And, yeah, it looks like this is coming in from CBS News. It's a breakdown of the caucus thus far. Apparently, it's really breaking because you can barely get into the site, and I'm sure everybody's jumping on it. I wonder what this is. Okay, Iowa caucus entrance polls says Romney, Paul and Santorum in a three-way race, according to CBS.com. It is not pretty much reporting
really who
is in the lead, but they are saying right now that the numbers look as though it is a three-way tie for now. We don't know who's going to turn out, but Santorum, as many people predicted, was going to burst onto the scenes, and I'm happy to see it, although, look, I went from Herman Cain to Newt Gingrich because I think they had a great debate on C-SPAN a couple of weeks ago that I watched online that I loved. It was so good. But when Herman Cain was gone, then I had to go with Gingrich because of the respect and the kindness he showed Herman Cain, who I believe is going to endorse Newt Gingrich. So I'd like to see his supporters go Gingrich's way. Santorum is not that I, you know, again, like I said at the beginning of the show, I didn't know much about him. And I think he, again, did not have national what's the word I'm looking for here? He wasn't nationally recognized. That's the point.
Right. But he will after tonight because right now CNN and the live results, CNN has got him in the lead.
CNN's got him in the lead? What's the percentage points?
He's at 26%. Followed by Ron Paul at 23, And Romney a distant third at 18%.
Whoa. Well, see, I knew Romney. See, again, it was always been Romney's problem. And people who remember from the WRKO show when Romney ran for ran in a presidential race on a presidential primary in 2008, I made the same argument. People aren't in the Republican Party are not going to vote this guy in. Forget about his, you know, playboy, you know, boyish good looks, whatever. I don't care anything about that. I have real, real strong issues, and not about health care, as Gene suggested earlier. I think it's been strongly about his flip-flopping positions and literally throwing his finger up in the air and finding out which way the wind blows. And, you know...
Right. That's been his problem since the beginning, his flip-flopping.
Yeah, it's his Achilles heel. You know, I understand that, you know, there's the old saying, you can't please everyone all of the time.
And he tries so damn hard to.
Oh, he just wants so bad.
And that's his problem.
And again, I can see a guy like him who's kind of got, you know, that look about him. That's what I didn't like about him. I called him a jock. You know, I said he looks like the guy with the Letterman jacket in high school. You know, he's got the prettiest girl in school. He's cool. He points the finger at you when he says hello. Hey, what's up, man? How you doing? You know, he's got that. You know, he's got that look about him, and that's always driven me nuts. And I kind of feel like he's out there pleasing everybody. Hey, what's up, stoners? Yeah, man, I get you, man. I get you, stoners. And smoking weed. What's up, man? Look at you. I like that. You got your Argyles on, man. Your pocket protectors. Oh, right, man. I got you, man. Yeah, man. I dig what you're doing. Then he sees the cheerleaders. Yeah, what's up, cheerleaders? Yeah, cheering. I love it. Cheering. That's right. Root for the whole team. I like it. That's that guy. That's Mitt Romney.
That's the guy you want to punch in the eye.
You have to punch him in the face. But that's the guy. I hate to use the word, but kind of a douche. I mean, he is. That's what he's talking about. He's just kind of like, you know, yeah, man, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's just so phony. It's just phony. And I don't believe it. I never believe it. I can't fall for it. I don't care what it is he does or what it is he says. He just thinks that he's everybody's pal. Anyway, number 347-308-8871. It's Reese on the radio. It's like, he's everybody's pal. Yeah, man, I like to, oh, look at it, in the teacher's lounge. All right, teaching the kids. I like the teachers. That's what that guy is. I hate it.
So, hey, bud, what do we got coming up in the next hour?
In the next hour, we're going to do some news and views. We're going to talk about all the things that upset me, piss me off, make me angry. It's really, really scary stuff, man. When we come back in the next hour, we're going to talk about just the news in and of itself is just frightening. But, of course, I've got some and we're going to have a preview to talk about tomorrow's show, which I'm hoping, and I don't want to make any promises, but I'm hoping that we have this guest who will probably call it from prison, who is a famous rapper back in the late 90s, early 2000s, turned himself in for a murder he committed 18 years ago. Now the prosecutor wants him to do 15 years to life, and he's actually trying to get some leniency for coming forward. And if we don't get to talk about him, I think we should still talk about it in general. But we'll get into that a little bit in the next hour. So while we're here, I don't know. You know what I feel like doing? You know,
what's
it's
that?
Not Friday yet, but you know what? I really, really love this song. And I think it's only right that I play it because I'm really, really in love with it. I'm just going to do a little bit of like 2-minute dance party, but it'll probably be a little longer than that. But we'll go into the top of the break, and we'll come back. We've got about 4 minutes to the top of the hour. So we'll play this, and then we'll come back, and we'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio. Number's 347-308-8701, or you can log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com, of course. And you can email me right now, live, if you like, at ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. I'm taking your emails, and we'll talk. All right, we'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Better and where Denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times. Then grab it.
Mary had a little lamb and Jesus was his soul. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back. Running Down a Dream. That's just my theme song, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that's just my theme. Running Down a Dream.
Now, I've got a question for you.
Sure. What's up?
Now, that was it, a two-minute dance?
Yeah, but it lasted about four. Well, it's called Two-Minute Dance Party, and I used to do this on Fridays. Let me explain to you how the genesis of this. By the way, let me introduce the show. It's Reese on the Radio, live on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio, and you can give us a call at 347-308-8701. Two-Minute Dance Party pretty much started like this. But what I always loved about music was its danceability. Just something that makes you, even if you don't have to get up and dance, but something that makes you move when you hear it. It's got a nice beat, it's got a nice melody, it's got a nice sound, whatever the case might be. So here's what happened. I was working for a limousine company on 53rd and Park Avenue. And it was at McKenzie & Company, which is a famous advertising or accounting firm, I apologize, an accounting firm. And we had our car service inside their building, and we were only picking up people who worked at McKenzie & Company. Anyway, so the day on Friday would always be humdrum, and it would get really, really hectic because all the executives are going out to their homes, be it the Hamptons, be it up in Connecticut, wherever it was, and it would get crazy in there, and people were sweating and annoyed, and the customers were yelling, whatever the case might be. So I decided on Friday, because it was the end of the week, I told everybody, listen, we got to stop what we're doing, not answering any phones for 2 minutes, and we're going to put on the radio, and whatever's playing, everybody's got to get up and dance for 2 minutes. So as a supervisor, I made them do this. And what was great is that we did it at 12 noon, and Hot 97, the hip-hop station at the time, and this is before I even started working in radio, they had the old school at noon.
Right.
So I would turn on the old school at noon, and it was bound to be something reminiscent and cool, and people who were in my age group could appreciate. So I'd turn it on no matter what was on, and there it was. Turn it on, and the song would be on, and it was always a great song on Friday. And we got up, and we danced for 2 hours, and people laughed, and we giggled and everything, and came back and regrouped and dealt
right
with the rest of the day until we had to go home. And it was such a stress reliever. So loved it so much. When I got on radio at WRKO, I said, you know what, Friday, at the end of the day, and at the end of the show, you know, it's not that I have to phone it in or anything like that or keep it. People are excited about the weekend. Let's just go out with a bang, man. Let's just stop for a second. We're talking about politics, talking about news, everything that annoys us and how angry we are. Let's have that one moment where, for 2 minutes, where we just stop and enjoy a song. I picked the song, which, you know, is usually the case, and I would play everything from, I can't remember the name of the song, but I remember one of the last songs played at WRKO was that song from the movie Lost Boys, where Corey Haim is in the bathtub, I ain't got home, whatever that song was called, the Frogman, I think, is the guy who sings the song, and I love that song, and I played, and that's kind of reflective of what it is that I do, so that's what the two-minute dance party is all about. It's about really, really, you've gone through a really, really hard time in your life. You got to take 2 minutes, even if you can, and just put on a song, your favorite song. If you can do it with your family, you can do it with your loved one, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever. You can do it, but just relieve yourself. Hey, when you're in an argument with your girl, and you guys, you and your girlfriend or you and your spouse, you can't figure things out, and you're getting nowhere, if you can, throw that song. Maybe not the song that you're meant to or whatever it is, but that's a song you know you both love. And throw that on and just relieve some of that stress. And just, you know, kind of dance. You know, let it all, and then come back. You'll probably laugh. Maybe you'll forget about the argument. Maybe you'll reapproach it a different way. But I think that's what the two-minute dance part is all about. Did I explain that well?
No, in that case, I would stay away from songs like Everyone Was Kung Fu Fighting.
No, that's a great song.
I wouldn't go near the Rocky theme.
Why would
I stay away from every pro wrestling theme imaginable? Not the time you want to consider fighting hear a good fight song while you're arguing with your spouse.
I would suggest that you probably not put on like Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette. You know, you want to know. That's probably not a good song. But, yeah, but there, you know, just think of something that's a little more lighthearted. Anyway, it's Reese on the radio. The number is 347-308-8701. We are live. We are here weekdays from 7 to 10 p.m. It's the final hour. We're going to do everything under the sun. We're going to cover everything under the sun. If it's news, if it's politics, if it's social events, if it's social commentary, we will cover it. We're going to talk about everything. And that's the reason why it says the culture critic at large. And since I am, let's get to some culture criticism. According, again, as we've reported here, it looks like Wow. Okay, so new results are coming in now. It looks like Ron Paul at 24%, Rick Perry at 23%. I cannot believe I'm actually reading this. That's not right. Is that right?
I'm checking my results as well.
That says Rick Perry at 23%, Mitt at 20%, Newt at 13%. No, it's got to be Rick Santorum. It's not Rick Perry. It's Rick Santorum. I was about to say, I can't be losing my mind here. Like, Rick Perry, you kidding me? Okay, so
it's way too early, party.
Yeah, according to this, the caucus night right now, I've got... Okay, this is from the Des Moines Register, and you can log on to DesMoinesRegister.com. Says Santorum had 480 votes with 25.7% of the vote. Ron Paul with 23.5% with 439 votes. Mitt Romney with 342 votes secures 18.3%. Gingrich in fourth place with 302 votes has 16.1%. Then Rick Perry, who has 176 votes with 9.4%. Now, here's the interesting thing. Michelle Bachmann, 116. She got 6.2% of the vote. And John Huntsman got 5%.
My pony.
That was your pony?
Yeah. I remember what I was discussing with you earlier. With everyone that's currently in the lead, before it's all said and done.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can almost smell the scandal.
Right. I understand what you're talking.
The Republican Party were too competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to lose.
Right.
And they sometimes get into the bad habit of slicing and dicing each other way too deep to where at times you can't recover.
Yeah, but that's, you know, what I find interesting about this, with Rick Santorum's, I mean, literal skyrocket. Again, I think what's really, really true about all of this is that all of the news was wrong. All of the news was wrong.
Well, quickly, I'm on CNN, and their live results. They have Paul in the lead at 24%. Got a dead eight for second position with Romney and Santorum. Gingrich in third with 13, Perry with 10, Bachmann with 6, and Huntsman with 1.
I got them at 0.3 in the Des Moines Register, which is interesting. Because, who do you trust? Who do you trust in this case? I don't know, even know where
to go.
And that's what
12% voted in already, or, you know?
Only, that's what 12% of the precincts were reporting? Okay, that's
right.
Well, we've got to wait a little longer, of course, and, you know, we probably won't get them until the end of the night. But I think this is going to be Rick Santorum. Whether or not that means John McCain, the Iowa caucus in 2008, I believe he was somewhere in third place. I think he had 18%, and I don't think that he was ever pictured a favorite. But look, he ended up being the nominee. He ended up losing, of course, which I can't stomp. Stop getting upset about it. It drives me up the wall. It just drives me up the wall. You know, I know I don't talk. See, JC and I, we don't really talk politics much because we never ever get into this exchange. But he knows my politics. I don't even know his. I don't even bother to ask JC his politics because I don't know. Probably because I don't want to be disappointed because I like the guy and he might say something that I hate. I would be like, I'd look at him with like crossed eyes. What? You know, but he accepts me for who I am. I don't know whether or not he agrees with me, but he accepts me for who I am, so I'm willing to take him at that. So that's why I never ask.
No. It is what it is. I mean, I don't talk politics with a lot of close friends because you tend to get into real serious arguments over it. I mean, I've lost a lot of friends because of my politics.
Can I tell you something? This is going to make you laugh. This is a true story. This is a true story. Now, everyone knows that I got locked up on October 2nd, 2008. So it was right before the presidential election. So we're talking, you know, October, November. for the presidential election. So people had already known my politics. So we're sitting there in the day room, the break room, we watch TV, and we're watching the election because that's what's being covered everywhere.
Right.
And I'm in jail on Rikers Island, and I'll be honest with you, there were 50 guys in my unit. I was lucky if 4 of them were white. So everyone else is black and Spanish. Or black and Latino. What's the word they're calling each other today? Anyway,
Latino.
But they're all there. So they all know my politics. I'm a conservative, one of the... They were not happy about it, of course. None of these knuckleheads ever voted a day in their life. I mean, for crying out loud, they barely pick up their phone to vote for the next American Idol. Why would they ever vote for the President of the United States? But I'll never forget. I'll never forget this line. We're sitting in the day room, and at a particular point, I came, got others, and one kid looked at me, and then kept going on. And I'll never forget it. As soon as it was announced that he was the winner, and everyone was cheering in Chicago, showed it on TV. One of the kids looked at me, a gang member, and he said, "You're lucky, because if Barack Obama would have lost, we're going to beat that ass tonight." I swear to you, that's exactly what he said. I looked at him and I said, "No, I don't think so, buddy. I think if you'd have lost, I think you'd have put an H on your chest and you'd handled it. Because it wouldn't have mattered to you anyway." But they were, they were really in there, like, angry. He's like, "You're lucky."
Well, I mean, that's just it. I mean, a lot of people who they listen to you. They become a supporter of what it is that you do.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't know you, or even so much your history. I mean, being in Rikers in New York, you're very well known in New York,
right?
Because of your work on radio stations in New York. Hell, you're on the hottest radio station, hip hop and R&B radio station on the planet. The only hip hop and R&B radio station on the planet that makes it into movies, that are made up or fictitious, but you are that individual that you are today, that you were on the radio back then.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
No, I was going to make a point that you just mentioned that Hot 97. I remember one time when I was going on cable, they played a movie, World Trade Center.
Whoa.
And I'll never forget how bad I cried because the character with Nicolas Cage, he's a young Spanish actor, very, very young. He's been around for a little while. I'm trying to remember his character's name. But anyway, there's a scene where Nicolas Cage and the other police
officer. Was that John Turturro?
Not John. He looks like John Turturro's little brother.
Okay.
Yeah, he looks like him, but I can't remember what the actor's name is, but he's been in several films. But anyway, so they're riding down in a bus going downtown, getting to the World Trade Center, and I'll never forget the line that he says to Nicolas Cage, where he says, "A plane just hit the second tower." He goes, "How do you know?" He says, "My wife just heard it on Hot 97." And
right.
I literally started crying because I was the one who announced it on Hot 97 that it happened.
Right. I mean, how many hours did you do that day?
Oh, man. I started that morning at 4 a.m. I don't think I left until 7 that night. I was on the air for a long time. I'll never forget that day. That day gave me my bones, September 11th. I mean, I really made my bones on September.
Right.
But they hear that in a film where the guy says, "My wife just heard a second plane was hit on Hot 97. I'll never forget the moment that I make that claim. I have the tape to this day where I announced that a second plane has gone into the World Trade Center. It looked deliberate. I'll never forget that. And for it to end up in that movie was, forget about it. It was just for me. I cried. I was sobbing. I was like, it was, I cannot believe that, I don't know, for many reasons, but that kind of stuck with me. But, what else can I say? Anyway, we've got plenty of news and views for you today. I figured I'd just reflect on that. I've got plenty of news. As you've heard, breaking news, CBS is reporting that there's a three-way tie in the Iowa caucus between Romney, Paul, and Santorum. And for those of you who don't know who they are by now, that is Mitt Romney, Ron Paul, and Rick Santorum on a three-way race. But the Des Moines Register is reporting that Rick Santorum has a comfortable lead, or at least a considerable lead, at 23.5% with 480 votes, and Ron Paul right behind him with 23.5% with 439 votes. They are not, all of the votes they're saying are not in yet, or they should be in yet. I will be looking them up to find out exactly what they are. I'll be telling you, and I'll be watching them with you. But I want to get to this news story before we go to a break. This one made me laugh, I think, but it kind of let me know how sad our world is and the country that we live in. Only for, how can I put this? Because what happened was not just sick. I mean, it was flat out dumb. Many people have been going to the library to get their books because, of course, the economy is rough right now. It's tight.
Right, so, that's what it is.
So, and when I heard this particular story, I had to say, poor little girl. But here it is. Hold on.
Because the visitor was a very polite Charlton police sergeant who answered the corner of a mother loose in the neighborhood, but to let her know that her daughter had two books several months overdue, which needed to be returned or paid for.
I closed my door, I looked at my daughter, and she started crying, and I said, "What's the matter?" And she goes, "Is that policeman going to arrest me?"
They found and returned the books, but Haley's mom argued that sending a cop to their house was like pounding a 10-penny nail with a sledgehammer.
Certainly not.
Even Sergeant Dowd admits he wasn't real keen on it.
Well, nobody wanted to, on this end, get involved in it, but the library contacted us, the chief delegate, and apparently I was one of the low men on the totem pole.
But state law does outline a misdemeanor for such things, and a friendly reminder might make a better impression and better results than a cold summons to court.
The library director knew she'd get flack over this, but tells me it was a last resort aimed at the dozen worst offenders, folks who hadn't responded to calls, emails, and bills, and who owed taxpayers a collective $4,000 in missing books.
The Benoits insist they never got any warning.
I understand they want to get it back, but I just think there's, there's got to be a better way to do it.
Police had hopes their effort would recover books in a kinder, gentler fashion.
Well, that's the point. We're hoping that it just resolves the problem. We don't have to ever do this again.
That would suit the Benoits just fine.
It is ridiculous.
In Charlton, Ken McLeod, WBZ News.
How in the hell am I supposed to respond to this story? Because I've got plenty of ways that I can.
Now, you're going to have to break it down for me because... A lot of the audio broke up really, really bad at the beginning.
Oh, are you
serious?
It was
really, really low.
I will break it down. It turns out that the poor little girl had overdue books. Poor little girl. Poor little Mary had overdue books. And because her overdue books had not been returned, they sent the fuzz out for her. They sent the poor house to collect her books that she had
not. You gotta be kidding me.
I'm dead serious. They pulled out the cops. A sergeant, not a regular officer, a sergeant. Can you imagine what that little girl had to go through? I mean, if we really, really come to this, ladies and gentlemen, that they bring in the cops to your house to get unreturned library books, here's the scenario.
And what town did they say this happened in?
I forget. It's Chatham or Chartham or something like that. It doesn't even matter. The librarian is going to get black over it. It's going to make me laugh. This is how I believe that the whole scene played out in that little 5-year-old girl's life. With a little something like this. Excuse me.
Go on the ground. Go on the damn ground. That's right. What do you got over there? Curious George? Curious George, pick it up.
What's over here?
Wow.
Horton Hill to who?
What do you do with these bullets? Give it up. Don't make me shoot. Give me your pipe. Are you kidding me?
And wait. And here's the best part. We used police force, and I'm sorry. I know they didn't use force, but it is. We used police force to collect $4,000 worth of books. Seriously.
The police force to collect $4,000 worth of books.
No. That's they said they had overdue books to the sum of $4,000. Now, I'm sure this is a small town or whatever the case be, but they thought that sending the police, that was saving money. Like, what, really? It cost the police that much money. Okay? It cost the police that much money to even hand out these or to walk to each and every one of these houses to go tell the people, hey, you got an overdue book. Can you imagine somebody knocking on the door telling you that you've got an overdue book? A police officer? I mean, I would laugh in his face. Hi.
Wow.
Hey, officer, I'm sorry. What's the problem? Do we have a predator in the neighborhood? Was there a lost dog? What, we have a cougar? Is there a cougar in the neighborhood? What's going on? We got a mass murderer? What happened? Is there a flood? Are we evacuating? Oh, I'm sorry. You're here for Curious George and Judy Blume books. Who did you pick off at the station? You moron. What are you doing here? Go home. Yeah, I'll send back the books. I got you coming. Thanks for coming by. Absolutely ridiculous. I can't believe that, well, it became a news report, but, you know, they're saying that there's actually a law that they can actually come. Please don't tell me that's true. I hope that's not true. I hope it's not true that you can arrest someone for not returning library books. I pray to God that's not true. Because if it is, I'm done. I'm just done. There's nothing else left to say. It's ridiculous. It's scary. And it's the state of our world. It's just the state of our world. And I swear to you, if the police ever come to my door about a library book, I actually go to the library. No, I can't say often, but I've gone. I've gone quite a bit. Got a great book there not too long ago. I'd love to go back and get it. But now, I don't know. Maybe I should just get a Kindle. Never going to happen. By the way, when we come back, I got another news story I'd like to bring up. And I'd also like to talk to you about why I think the Kindle is bad for our society. Why I think these e-books, these iBooks, these web books, these electronic books, all of them are bad for our society and why they need to go. And I don't care how hip you think you are carrying them on the train or on the bus or to work. What you're doing is a very, very horrible thing.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Funny you would say that because today I was just looking up software to start publishing my own books for Kindle.
You are not thinking of doing this, Jay.
Yes, I was.
No, listen to me. This is a blight on our society. And I'm just going to go to a break. I got to go to a break. I'm going to come back and explain that before we get out of here. We're going to talk about the gentleman who might be coming on the air tomorrow. I hope to goodness he comes on tomorrow. But I can't believe you, Jay. You're killing me right now. You're killing me.
Go to
you
commercial.
Really put that in. You're killing me. Yeah, I'm going to commercial.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Ayers, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com. There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist. The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor. The party of segregation. The party of the KKK. They're the racists.
And we're back. It's Reese on the Radio. Welcome back to all of you who are tuning in. Number's 347-308-8701. We will be here from Monday till Friday, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., doing what it is that I love to do, talk, run my mouth. What's it? Bump my gums. Whatever that terminology is. I laugh every time I hear it. Bumping my gums. Very
what are you bumping your gums about?
Yes, I love that line. I love that term. Bumping my gums.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're back. And listen, before we went to break, I was talking about why I hate this whole ebook thing. What my big issue with it is, and why I know it's going to fail. And again, I could be wrong, but I know. I think I know. Belief is for people who lack knowledge. And I know that this is going to fail. Here's why.
Do tell.
My biggest dream, and anybody's biggest dream, is to buy a home. And when you buy a home, when you really, really think about yourself as, you know, you could be an elitist, you could be whatever, most people are well-read. Most people are well-read. They read a good book, they like good books, they like certain style of books, they like novels, maybe they like, you know, crime dramas, whatever the case is. But they're well-read. And I believe people like to show off having books. I think it's a part of who it is we are as show-offs. I think we are all a little show-offy when it comes to our knowledge. And when people walk into our home, I think people like to see books around the house. A cookbook here, you know, an American classic there. I think people want to see that kind of stuff. I dated a girl, all I could see was, like, you know, all of those self-help books. Deepak Chopra,
who's got a show, by the way, here on Blog Talk Radio.
The Celestine Prophecy, Eckhart Tolle, Dr. Joseph Murphy. They're girls who have that kind of stuff on there because they want to know, let people know what they're into. You know, I think that the real rich guy, he likes to go in to his study, pull out a cigar, drink a little cognac, and sit in his library with all of his books, of his American classics, his hardcover books. It shows status. And that's what we are as people. We like to show our status. And you can't do that with a Kindle. It destroys fabric. Now, some of you may think that it's okay for you to have that, but I think that's ridiculous. I think that we like to show people what kind of books we're reading. See, I can't lend you my Kindle to read the latest book I just read. I can't. When you come by my house and you're looking at it, you go, hey, is that the new James Patterson? Yeah, man, just read it. It's really great. Can I borrow it? Sure. No problem. And what do you do when you see somebody with a Kindle? Hey, what you reading on your Kindle? I'm reading the new James Patterson. Just finished it. Can I borrow your $500 device? What are
no,
you
they're
mind?
Not that expensive.
Whatever.
They're not that expensive. You know, I kind of think that I kind of like the idea of the Kindle. The reason being is that for those of us that plan to write our own books or have something that they want to share with the world,
okay.
Getting published isn't the easiest thing to do.
All right. To be honest with you, Jay, I think it should be hard. I think it should be hard. I think it should be difficult for you to get your book published because I think that the content should matter. I think that what you put out there should be... Hey, come on, man. If you think about it today, man, they're publishing anybody. Paris Hilton had a best-selling a book. Okay? Snooki had a bestseller. Okay? It shouldn't be... It's easy enough if Snooki can get a book.
But don't you think everybody has a right to be heard, if not read?
This is true. This is why we have blogs. But you're absolutely right. You know, to give a shout-out to a writer who I love, Paul Bibo, who's a brilliant, brilliant, funny writer, you know, wrote a book called Sundays with Vlad. And I don't care whether or not you're into vampires, because I'm not, but I read that book, and I loved it. And again, you know, my bottom line is I understand the publishing angle, and you're saying, you know, try the easiest way and everybody should be heard. But I think that you, what's great about having that book in your hand, man, when you're riding a train or riding a bus, holding that book. It just can't.
You're just breaking up real bad there, but
no, I'm
you
saying
know, me,
I just said it just can't survive. I don't think that it can survive. There's no way that it can and should survive.
Now, me, I plan on taking advantage of that the new urban book club market, but more so on the smuttier side of it. I'm not talking about written porn. I'm not talking about written porn, but you know the books I'm talking about, the Zanes.
We're talking about sort of like the kind of romance novel. Oh, no. Are we talking about like, are you talking about black erotica?
Is that what they're called? Okay, I guess we can call it black erotica. It's not going to be erotic, but, you know.
If you use the word smut, I think the best way to clean it up to call it erotica. You're going to use words like...
No, black
like
erotica. Listen, that's a huge market. Those books sell amazing. And I thank God for these book clubs out there because everybody in the club has to buy one. And if you can put together your own website or have the means of getting your own website together, and you can get the software as well as the recording equipment to do these books, you could self-publish yourself.
I'm just, Just why that genre? I thought that
why
you
that genre? That genre, because you know what?
I'm completely out of this equation as far as even speaking about it. I can't believe that you would want to do that particular genre. That sounds, I'm like, I'm going, who are these people who love black erotica?
Listen, I have a lot of friends, black, white, Hispanic, and they love those books, and they're talking about them, and I watch them talk about them on the Facebook pages, and when they get together with their book clubs, and they have book clubs of 20 members or more, and I mean, you're selling those books at $10-$15 a piece, and they're selling, and they're having these big, huge urban book conventions, New York and Atlanta and Charlotte and Chicago and Dallas. That's a lot of money.
Well, I mean, again, nothing
and,
against.
And that's without the cost of having to actually manufacture and publish a book.
Well, okay, fine. So you're saying you're cutting out the middleman, so
exactly.
you don't have to do all of that. I don't know. I just, for me, it's scary to even think of more people joining that medium of the electronic book. I don't know.
I see your point, though. I see your point about having books around, period. I mean, just to look at. I mean, you've seen my bar.
Yeah, there you go.
Glow Bar?
Yeah, sure.
I got a nice little fancy table next to it, and on it it's got a couple of encyclopedias. Don't ask me which ones, but it just happened to look good. But, I mean, it has my – I don't know if you haven't seen it, but when we get you up here, my living room now has that Victor Newman office vibe.
Okay. Okay, that's not too bad. But, again, that's what that's about. People like that. I mean, it's a look, I believe, that still resonates with a home, you know, with the books. And, again, like, I mean, maybe I exaggerated a little bit about the $500 device, but you get my meaning. When you buy a book, you know, you lend it out to somebody to read it. I remember when I was a kid, James was a big fan, my best friend James was a big fan of either the Star Trek books or the Star Wars books that came out. And another friend of mine, Romeo, who would buy those books all the time and would read them, and James would come over, and, you know, they weren't the best of friends. They didn't hang out every day, but certainly Romeo would loan James the book, and then he'd get it in a year. You know, so maybe they got. Jamie was a slow reader. It's just that he probably would forget. But you couldn't imagine. You can't lend Kindle. You just can't. So I don't want to use the word self-absorbed. I think, and or even use the word selfish. I just think it's kind of silly. Share, not something you know.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, aren't those devices like the books that they sell come on like little discs or pods or something that you plug into the machine?
I'm sure that you have to download a certain barcode never mind. I'm not even going into it. Someone I know just recently got a gift that had two books. One of the books, in fact, that I love, Rendezvous with Destiny, and that particular book was given to him in an e-card, whatever fashion, which I think, I'm sorry, I'm not on board. I'm going to have to be, but, you know, I know that I'm right about this.
Well, if you're right, or if you're wrong, I'd start collecting all the books that I can now, because much like records and 8-tracks and CDs, they're a thing of the past because of digital media. And
you're right.
Digital media and distribution of digital media is obviously the future. So, I mean, why couldn't you see books at some point heading in that direction? What are you going to do with the comic book crowd?
That's already gone digital. I've seen that. And it scares the hell out of me. Yeah, I've seen it. I saw a guy on an e-book reading a Spider-Man comic on the bus in Queens, and it just baffled me. Anyway, the number is 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the Radio. If you've got an opinion, please call up, or you can email us at reeseontheradio@yahoo.com if you'd like to be a part of the show. By any means, you'd like to send us your comments, send us your hate mail. I'm expecting to get some hate mail. I'm definitely expecting to get that. If you want to know where it is that I've been, where you've been, where the hell are you, what are you doing? You know, we love having you back. We hate having you back. What are you doing back? You can do all of that by logging on to reeseontheradio.com or sending us an email, of course, to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. And you can check us out here from Monday to Friday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com/reeseontheradio. And that's /. Do we really need to say that anymore? I don't even know why anyone uses that term, /. It's just /. Everybody knows it's /. Have you ever used /? Do you use that anymore? I don't think anybody's using that anymore. Anyway, we're coming near the end of the show. it was our debut. We had a lot of interesting topics. Just to recap what we talked about today, we went from everything from what happened to me back in October of 2008, on October 22nd, during my arrest, my 2 years, 5 months in jail, my trial. I got out. That was our first hour. We talked about the growing number of cases of false rape claims in our media and how the police and the district attorney's office are handling them. Second hour, of course, we got into that horrible, horrible Alan Combs suggesting that Rick Santorum took his dead baby home to play. We played that on
video
as well. Was that really stupid? I didn't get your take on that. Was that really dumb?
Well, I watched the video. I watched the audio. I mean, I listened to the audio, and I watched the video of the interview. And it's like, how could you? How heartless could you be to say that they took the baby home to play with him?
Why would
show him to the other children?
Took the baby home to play. It was just insightful for anyone to even suggest that. And Alan Combs lost a lot. Well, not that he hadn't already. Just a lot of credibility with me just in that. You know, just if someone's asking you, hey, Rick Santorum is a radical and does a lot of crazy things, that's not one of the things you bring up as your opening point.
Right.
Which I thought was ridiculous. I'm sorry, I just got to play it again. It was just dumb. And it's so typical of liberals to do that. I don't even know whether or not it's done because people are going to hear that and go, wow, that Rick Santorum is crazy. And to even say that just as some sort of I don't know. I don't even know what the reaction was that he was trying to get from I guess people who listen to him. But anyway, here's the audio.
You know, the Republicans have speed dated every other Republican, and so there's nobody left except Rick Santorum. But once they get a load of some of the crazy things he said and done, like taking his 2 hour old baby who died right after childbirth home and played with it for a couple of hours so his other children would know that the child was real. I mean,
that's
stuff like
cheap,
that.
That's a cheap shot, Alan.
That's not a
to
cheap
say
shot.
It's crazy.
No, it's not. No,
something
it's not.
The child was real. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And it's only
that
right.
That was twisted.
It was, but I'm trying to figure out. This is Rick Santorum, I think, earlier today.
My former partner and friend, Alan Combs, got in a heated debate with Rich Lowry today. You had lost a child some years ago. It got very heated. You spoke to Alan earlier. And,
there's a lot of nasty stuff out there on the Internet. And I'm sure Alan reads a lot of it from the left about Rick Santorum. And my wife wrote a book called Letters to Gabriel about our son, who lived 2 hours and then passed away. And when he died in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m. And we decided to keep him in our room to be with him. And in the morning, we packed up and we took our son home to have a funeral at home and then to bury him later that day. We brought him home and we showed him to our children. We wanted to let them know that they had a brother. and who he was. And people have criticized us for that. Karen was a neonatal intensive care nurse for 9 years. And one of the things that Karen taught me and that she learned from that experience was you have to affirm the life of your child. You have to affirm that memory for your children and for you, and to recognize the dignity of that life, and to make sure that that child is forever a part of your family.
And I think that's the most...
You know, the Republicans have speed dated every other Republican, and so there's nobody left except Rick Santorum. But once they get a load of some of the crazy things he said and done, like taking his two-hour-old baby who died right after childbirth home and played with it for a couple of hours so his other children would know that the child was real. I mean,
that's
stuff like
cheap,
that.
That's a cheap shot, Alan.
That's not a cheap shot.
That's crazy.
No, it's not.
Something that's that personal.
No, it's not a cheap shot.
And that is
There was once upon a time that to be a Republican in this area of the country felt a little bit like being Gary Cooper in High Noon, outnumbered in a big way. But I remember the story of a fellow who was running for office as a Republican, and he was in a rural area, and it wasn't known to be Republican, and he stopped by a farm to do some campaigning. And when the farmer heard he was a Republican, his jaw dropped, and he said, "Wait right here till I go get Ma. She's never seen a Republican before." So he got her, and the candidate looked around for a podium from which to give his speech, and the only thing he could find was a pile of that stuff that Bess Truman took 35 years trying to get Harry to call fertilizer.
I'm so sorry about that, folks. Please forgive me. As usual, in every show, you are going to have technical glitches. Sure enough,
what
I have one. I have no idea. The entire system froze. Everything went. And again, for all of you who are out there who are listening again, I apologize. I promise I won't ever, ever have that happen again. But we live in this technological world.
This is the reason why I hate the e-book.
We live in the technological world. And you know what? When you're working in the technological world, you're going to have some glitches, and they happen. It's how you recover. That's, you know, that's pretty much the way that I look at it. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get an email from everybody. What happened? Where are you? What is going on? If they do. But, yeah, as I was saying before we got cut off, Alan Combs, complete moron. Completely, I have no respect for him. And the little that I did have for him is completely gone now. I'll never, ever want to listen to this guy speak again. He's just got no credibility now. Just none. Absolutely not. Hey, by the way, you didn't tell me, JC. What did you think of the Iowa too white, too rural argument?
Believe it or not, I kind of agree with Jamie.
You agree with Jamie? Man. You would agree with him. Why do I know that?
Probably because I've never been out there. All that I know about out there is
corn.
You never hear about any kind of crime, so I don't want to say obviously there's no black people out there if you're not hearing about crime, because there's crime everywhere. But I mean, something has to go on there other than what are the potatoes and corn?
Look. It's Iowa, not Idaho, but nonetheless.
But something or other.
The African-American community out there, by the way, there's an African-American community in Iowa. Prove it. They make up 2.5% of that area. Okay? Now, compared to
2.5% of the area?
Look, I said, okay, look, I didn't say it was a great number, but it's still, that's considerable. 2.5% in Iowa, which they consider to be all white, you still have 2.5% black people there. All things considered, that's a number. They're there.
How large is the state of Iowa?
It's fairly small. There's not a lot of people there. And again, it's a small community. In the grand scheme of things, the national average is 12.6.
You said 2.5.
The national average is 12.6 for African By the way, Latinos outnumber us 2-1. I think they're over 60.
What happened? A bus breakdown on the way to the Million Man March?
Look.
Where are you saying 5 from?
2 point, that's an actual number. That comes from, I think it was a political science study of the state of Iowa during a caucus. I think the numbers just came in recently, and it's a 2.5 African-Americans live in Iowa. Black people are everywhere, my man. There are black people everywhere. You know? Yeah, listen, there are black people in, you know, Wisconsin, you know, and I saw them on happy days.
How about Maine?
Of course, in fact, there are Africans all over Maine. Oh, yeah.
Ah, that's right, that Canadian border.
You remember that story?
I'm thinking more to the Canadian border.
Canadian border? No, more African. There's a lot of African immigrants that have transported themselves into the main area. They're everywhere. Black people are everywhere. Africans may not necessarily count. But in fact, when I was a girl who lived in Maine, she used to come when I was 7 years old. She used to come every summer. She used to come to the Queens. I knew her when I was a kid. She was from Maine. And I couldn't stop laughing because it's called a vacation state.
They don't eat lobster in Africa, do they?
I don't know. I was told there'd be no cuisine questions. How would I know?
I heard you have a whole show with no cuisine questions with Chef Boyardee on the other end of the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, that's it for the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you log in. We'll be back here tomorrow at 7 p.m. sharp for another 3 hours. Of course, we'll get the breakdown of the Iowa caucus. We'll play some audio and some comments from some of the candidates who are there. And we'll also talk about what the pundits are saying, because trust me, I'll tell you, NBC News, CBS, and ABC, they will be breaking down the race in the normal, liberal, left-leaning, radical fashion that they do, because they'll be certain to be touting Rick Santorum and then finding a way to shut him down, because that's what they do. By the way,
hey, question.
Go ahead.
Can we rake pop culture over the coals tomorrow?
Oh, forget about it, man. We're going to go after everybody. I mean, I'm not touching
good.
The Kardashians. By the way, this is Kardashian-free radio.
Oh.
I won't talk about Kardashians. I am sick and tired of whatever. I'm sick and tired of Fat Butt and her giant sister. I'm done with them. I'm done with them. Okay?
Leia Chewbacca.
Every time I see Chloe, the first thing runs through my mind is Slay the Giant. I think she is. There's no way she's that big. She's
I see Chewbacca.
You see Chewbacca. You know what? You might be right about that. Let's go and get that sound effect tomorrow. I'm talking about them. I said it was Kardashian free radio, and I'm already talking
Crash
about them.
Kardashian, dude. Kardashian, because listen, that train's going to wreck one in. It's going to wreck real, real hard.
I can't wait. I'm just done with them. You know, I was waiting for the Paris Hilton train to go off the tracks. It finally has. Nicole Richie was smart enough to go quietly into the good night. Okay, but Paris Hilton, she faded like a candle. You know, it took a long time, but we finally got there. The Kardashians, I'm just done with them. I don't want to hear anything about them.
And we're not going to begin to talk about why Kim is famous. Her into stardom.
No, I won't talk about it. I won't talk about it because even the guy she got famous off of is the 2-bit R&B singer. I mean, how does she? I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, she was a nobody. He was half a somebody. And then she becomes a star. Who actually does? Like, no one ever. It was like falling up. That's what it was. That's the perfect example. And here I am talking about her. Why? Because somebody thinks she's compelling. I don't think she's compelling. I so hate her.
Skills.
And I guess that's a strong word, but I do. I really hate her. All right, we're gone. We're done. It's been great. I love you guys. I will definitely check you out tomorrow. We'll see you at 7 o'clock. We'll do it all over again, and we will be here weeknights, and we hope that you're going to be here too. Please remember, call us up at 347-308-8701. I got to plug that number more. I got caught up in my own conversation. The number is 347-308-8701. You can call up. You can tell us what you think. You can tell us your opinion. You can shout me down. You can scream at me. You can call me all types of names, but as long as you keep it clean. And look, I said this a long time ago, and somebody said it was corny, so I'd like to end with this. Radio is free, but I'm so glad you pay attention. It's Reese on the Radio. Holler.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.